It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. My name is Joey. That is Len. This is number 346. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, on YouTube at Access of Easy, or head over to accessofeasy.com, read the newsletter, watch the video, get all the stories we don't talk about. There's always a handful of more stories. We talk about the big ones and leave the rest to you. Buddy, what's going on over there? Happy Friday. Good morning. Spring day here. We're getting warmer and warmer by the week. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a halving day, Joey.
Ah, yes. The halving is today. That's right.
Bitcoin. Yeah, happy halving. So yeah, for those who are unaware, this is the issuance schedule for Bitcoin every day or every 10 minutes. Bitcoin is issued and it's cut in half today. And it's done so every 4 years. So there's a set schedule for Bitcoin issuance. And today is a very big day. It's a monumental day because it's going to be half the amount of the rewards given out to miners every 10 minutes. So yeah. It's other than that,
a monumental day, he says. I like it. Okay, yeah.
If this is like the every 4 years, there is a special day for Bitcoin. Every year for people, you have Christmas, you have New Year's, you have birthdays, and a whole bunch of other anniversaries, a whole bunch of other things. But for Bitcoin, what do we have? It's really just having, right?
Yeah, this is it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's everything is just amalgamated into one date. It's like watching the Leafs make the playoffs every 4 years, you get to see it. I don't know. I'll be honest. I have no idea.
Leafs have been good. I just tweeted a video of Bitcoiners being forced to talk about sports this weekend at the halving parties because obviously basketball and hockey both starting in earnest right now. Pretty funny. This guy Kyle, who used to do these videos, I think he was on SNL for a while. That's really funny. You should watch it if you haven't yet. Just look up Sporty Kyle on YouTube. It's like 3 or 4 minutes. It's worth it. Anyway. Big week this week, 6 stories to cover as far as I can tell. Last week's quote, there is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. That was by Oscar Wilde. A lot of correct guesses, but Lee got it first. Good job, Lee. Shout out to you. This week's quote, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. I really like that quote. I don't know who that's by, but if you do, put it in the comments. No searching. Don't pervert the process, okay? Stay true to the process. Don't upset Mark. Don't upset Joan. Okay. Make sure you stay true. And you'll get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS if you get it right. So looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with. Okay, buddy. Some interesting stories this week. Maybe we start with Roku since they're publicly traded or were. We could have gone to the stock a little while ago, but I think they just got bought. So we can't go to the stock.
Oh, they went now. Private?
Yeah. I think they were picked up by somebody. I forget who.
Why?
I don't know. I'm going to look. Let me see. Who did they get bought from? Oh, they got bought by Vizio, Walmart's Vizio brand.
Oh, now that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
Not so good products. combining forces to become a mediocre.
You know,
product.
If they could force this upon people, just the fact that you bought it, it's going to be default. It makes it somewhat viable. It's like the old Insignia brand from.
Oh yeah, of course. I had an Insignia TV when I was like in my mid-20s Insignia. You can get a 40-inch TV for like it was like $200, man, on Amazon Prime Day. Those were the days.
I was just looking at 65-inch. It's been strong for like 12, 13 years.
How's the color? We're due for a TV in our living room. I've had that TV for probably longer, maybe 9 years now, something like that. And the color is starting to not look so good, especially because I have like a really expensive TV for my like video game / media room. And the difference when I go upstairs, it's like looking at a TV from 1995. Like it just sucks. The color's so bad.
So that was the first mistake you made by getting a good TV. If you stuck with crappy TVs, you have nothing to compare it to, and then you'd be happy with whatever you have.
Words to live by. Words to live by. Never get anything good. You'll never have any expectations.
Keep the bar low, and then you'll be okay. Anyways, let's go on to this Roku story because, so anyone who is a Roku user should be on alert because there has been yet another security breach that may have impacted you. And this time hackers were able to access over 576,000 user accounts using stolen usernames and passwords. And as I mentioned, this is the second time, this is the second major security breach that impacted Roku this year. And we talked about the previous one. It was much, much smaller in scope in a previous Access of Easy episode. So if you want to look into that in depth, please check that, check into that episode. But either way, for this one, the hackers were able to use some of the compromised accounts that they've accessed, totaling less than 400, to make fraudulent purchases using stored payment information. So people were storing their payment information on their account. And when they were able to access these accounts, they were able then to purchase some crappy TV shows or movies or whatever. Like, what else could you buy from Roku? It's got to be just a show.
Apps maybe or something. I have no idea. Yeah,
I have no clue. But Roku, they have done the right thing here for the folks that were impacted by those purchases. They've refunded those customers. So in that respect, I have to give them credit for that. And they've also implemented two-factor identification for those particular users to prevent future attacks. And the two-factor authentication in this case requires a user to enter a special code in addition to the username and password. This is going to make it more difficult for hackers to gain access to the accounts. So if you are a Roku user, it's probably a good idea to change your password now, enable the two-factor authentication as an extra layer of security, and keep your eyes open for anything that's just odd with your credit card bills, if you did add your credit card information to Roku, but just anything in general. But it's just yet another honeypot that they were able to access. And yeah, 500 plus thousand, that's a ton of information they got.
Okay, this is interesting, but the big story here is actually not the breach, okay? The big story is that Roku bricked all of its sets after the breach was discovered and forced everyone using their products to accept the new user agreement that made sure they understood they were not allowed to sue Roku over data breaches and other such things. How's that for low quality, low energy nonsense? Like they're bricking their products in the face of a data breach, not even offering the 2 years of credit protection or whatever the standard is these days. I haven't seen that in a while, but they instead just brick all their TVs and force a new user agreement on people. How would that make you feel? Talk about like feeling like you got punked, eh? They give up your data. I mean, really, the technique is just using other data dumps and trying to get your Roku account opened up with it. But still, for Roku to say, as a result of this, we have to brick every single TV until they accept a new user agreement that exempts us from litigation, that's bad. Is really bad. If that was a bigger company, that would have been a huge story. But since this is just people who go to Walmart to buy these things, they're generally quiet about it and got away with it. I didn't even know they did that. I had no idea. That was not a story on this program, nor is it a story anywhere else that I looked at. But that was the big outcome here. That's nuts. Like, these guys don't care about your security. I wouldn't be using this stuff anymore. Roku, Vizio, I wouldn't use any of it.
I don't know if it's going to hold water though, because it's going to be moving forward. They're probably going to be exempt from any sort of law, lawsuits.
Just class action, right? So I don't know. I think it's like going to be reasonably binding, right? I don't know.
I don't know. If you get screwed over and then, the product you purchased is then no longer usable and you have to accept an agreement and, you're forcing them.
It's crazy. To accept it.
Yeah. So a court of law is probably going to say, this is in bad faith. You're twisting the arm of the user to accept it. And I don't think it's going to hold water. And
I hope you're right.
But either way, let's go on to Kaspersky, because they've discovered something. Well, it's interesting. There's some research they've done, and cybersecurity experts are on a high alert as a result. And they identified a new variant of the Lockbit 3.0.
This is making another appearance on the show, right? Lockbit's been on a few times last little while.
The 3.0 version, though.
Nice.
Cool. I don't know if we got to this rendition.
What did they get? Like a facelift, a nose job? What did they get?
It's a trilogy. So this is a ransomware as a service, and this injects a dangerous twist, though, because it has the ability to generate custom self-propagating malware that I don't think we've seen very much until now. And this development is particularly concerning because it allows the attackers to create ransomware specifically designed to spread across a compromised network. So unlike a traditional malware that encrypts the data on a single device, this self-propagates, and this variant could wreak havoc through an entire system, causing even more damage. So a recent incident highlighted that this new LockBit 3.0 variant, so it uses a very sophisticated attack, and it did so against an organization in West Africa. And the attackers used stolen credentials to gain access to the network and then deploy this custom ransomware. And the variant was able to detect, to evade detection, this is interesting, by disabling security software and erasing logs. And this makes it even more dangerous. So they're saying for people out there that are administering these networks, they should take additional course of action. So multi-layer defenses, for instance. So if you're relying solely on traditional security software, this is no longer sufficient. You have to have some sort of comprehensive strategy, and you have to employ it and be very active. Also educating users, phishing attacks. This is the way in for a lot of these things. So users have to be aware of phishing attacks and how to avoid being a victim of one of these things. And third, if you are impacted, backup, you have to have backups. So regular backups is a thing. So in case there is some sort of breach and you have to revert to a backup, hopefully it was one that is recent and you're not going to lose too much information. But yeah, this LockBit 3.0 seems nasty, but I don't think it's going to affect the average user like you or I. It's going to go after big organizations like companies, governments. So in that respect, we might be okay. But in the end, we're all going to be impacted.
I don't know what this sort of complexity level of the South African government's security suite is, but it gives me at least some level of comfort that they're looking at, or West Africa, I should say, an unorganized,
West African.
Yeah. It's not the government. It's some institution or some company. I don't know. Like, the thing that we talk about a lot on this show is how governments and corporations, like you mentioned, are like the subject of these sophisticated attacks. But what we never really find out is how sophisticated the defenses were. And I think that it's fair to say, honestly, Len, until proven otherwise, that most large entities, whether it's government or a company or whatever, they're just behind the eight ball. They've become apathetic to making sure their security stuff is up to date until they're attacked. And as you mentioned, this thing is self-propagating, you know, continues to, I guess, multiply inside a compromised system, which is very difficult to get around and fix and defend against. And I don't know what the complexity level of their defenses were, as I mentioned, but my guess is that they're pretty uncomplicated. You could say, well, that's an assumption you're making. It could be that the attacker is really complex. Maybe, but at the same time, you know, almost every time we talk about a story, whether it's a company like Roku or Microsoft's Teams suite or something like this in West Africa, generally what we find out either in the story or a few weeks later is that the defenses were subpar, suboptimal, and not cared for, not maintained. And that's what causes the issue in the first place. So while it is true that this is a little bit scary here, especially this bit about self-propagating ransomware, I do think it's worth asking, you know, what level of defenses are we talking about here? My guess is nothing extraordinary was being done to prevent against this.
Well, they could be using the cybercrime index as probably a way to help determine which countries are. That's the next story, because there's been a team of international researchers that they've unveiled this initiative. And this is the world's first cybercrime index. And this index aims to rank countries based on their cybercrime threat level. And researchers are hoping this is going to provide valuable insights into the global landscape of cyber criminal activity. Now, one may wonder how they ended up getting this. Well, how they created it. They used a few different factors. The prevalence of cyber attacks, and this is the number of cyber attacks originating from a country or the frequency in which the country is targeted. So that's one of the ways. They also looked at the sophistication of the attackers, the skill level and the resources required in order to do these type of operations, and also the vulnerability of national infrastructure. So countries that have weaker cybersecurity defenses or outdated infrastructure might be at higher risk. And the purpose of this whole index is just to identify cybercrime hotspots and properly allocate resources to defend against any future attacks and also raise awareness. I took a look at this a little bit in depth. I'm not sure if you saw where Canada's ranked, but they're ranked quite low. in this, which is, you know, interesting. I guess either we have a very decent defense or people just don't want to attack us. Could be a combination of the two. But the United States, along with Iran, China, and a few other countries, are ranked really high. It's funny they're clumping in these countries, like especially Iran, China, and United States. Like, you know, two of them are
Iran's not that high. China and the U.S. are basically the same. They're at par with each other.
Yeah, Iran is a little. Am I wrong?
Iran's only a four. Nigeria's up at 21. China's up at 27. Russia, of course, the boogeyman up near 60.
That's it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Iran is at the same level as Canada. My mistake. Mm. But it just seems odd. Like, you know, China and United States are so high. But either way, I mean, it just goes to show you that there's a lot of cyber activity that's being done attacking these countries. And also there is a lot of information that the attackers want. But really, how useful is this cybercrime index? I mean,
it's not.
I'm not in this field. I'm sure the people that are in this field are already aware. It's just simply raising awareness. And if it does, what do we do? Add more money to something to try to defend against it?
Or demand that we remove encryption services, or demand backdoors into devices, or demand that ISPs monitor traffic, or demand that you can't access the internet if you have potential to commit a crime based on some unknown index. It's opaque. It's nonsense. If you weren't sure how nonsense it was, just look at the map on the website. unsw.edu.au has the website or has the map. Russia's head and shoulders above everybody else. It's the same boogeyman as always. They want to convince you that there's a problem. And also, Len, you know, we've talked a lot over the years between the show and doing CBP as well about all these different governmental organizations even international organizations, NGOs or similar, talking about how, you know, there's the need for cooperation and we have to make sure we're doing this together. And it's never good for your freedoms and your privacy. And this is the same thing, you know, co-author of the study from the University of Oxford in the UK, CrimeGov, a European Union supported project based at the University of Oxford. Like, the more you read, the more red flags are popping up. And the story is always going to be, if you have nothing to hide, don't worry about us prying into every, you know, packet that you send over the internet. Don't worry about us prying into every router setting and Tor browser setting and looking at all your data and looking at all your infrastructure. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. This is, you know, I think this is a total joke, but someone who's smarter than me in this field will tell me why I'm wrong.
This next one, ARS Technica. It's not Ars Technica.
Ars Technica.
Ars, it's just funny. Ars,
this is a pretty popular pub. Ars Technica is popular.
Just the name. I'm like looking at it. Anyways, they've released.
They do a lot of stuff. It's like everything from, like, you know, product reviews to stories like this.
Okay, well, they released some information about a serious cybersecurity vulnerability that's affecting corporate networks, and I'm wondering how much money the Canadian government has allocated to this in their last budget. But either way, we have some highly capable attackers. They have launched a campaign, and these are highly skilled hackers, and they're exploiting a critical security flaw. These are known as a zero day in firewalls in Palo Alto networks. And this zero day, these are previously unknown vulnerabilities in software. And in this case, the attackers are taking advantage of a flaw in the network's firewall that allowed them to gain complete control, aka root access, of corporate networks. So there's potential here for widespread damage as a result of the exploit. And the hackers with root access could steal sensitive information and disrupt operations and even install malware that maybe the Lockbit 3.0 could be installed here. And the situation is very complicated because there's a lack of a patch that's readily available to address the vulnerability. But, you know, there's some recommendations right now that the people should be employing. Businesses should determine if they're using one of these network firewalls and if they have the affected software. And they should always also keep lookout for a patch that is going to be taking advantage of it. But also there should be very concerned and very diligent with monitoring their services, their networks, and to ensure that they are up to date and there's nothing going on that's, you know, that seems to be suspicious. But I have nothing else to say about this, but these Palo Alto networks seems to be have been compromised with 0 days. So good luck if you're running one of these.
Ars Technica has a graphic of how this thing works, worth looking at. I'd say the other noteworthy thing is that there's a quote in the article here talking about how you're going to see a spike in activity for a lot of these networks because as the patches roll out, the urgency to exploit them goes up by nefarious actors or for nefarious actors. So I would say that, staying on top of this is important. The other thing, Len, curious, who's using Palo Alto networks? Like, that's one thing I meant to look up here. Palo Alto network users. How many customers does Palo Alto Networks have? 85,000 customers. That's a lot. That seems like a high number. When you think about the number of potential issues across the board there, one thing we don't often talk about on the show is like the compounding security problems that you wind up with when one major platform or service has a breach, right? So if you think about Palo Alto, let's say you can get root access and start, you know, clawing passwords, usernames, addresses, stuff like that, or client data or whatever. You know, it's almost invariably true that in the next month doing this show, we'll hear about another breach where data from this breach was used to start this kind of snowball, right? And it happens more and more. That's why when me and you talk about these stories, one thing we always try and mention is like, you can only control where you put your data. And it's becoming clearer and clearer that the places you thought were really secure just are not, right? Palo Alto Networks, a huge, huge outfit. Like I said, with 85,000 customers, but they will be the source of data that's used for other breaches in the next month or two. It's almost a guarantee. We don't talk about that on the show enough, but you're going to wind up seeing stuff from this issue pop up other places. And so what can you do as a user? Well, honestly, not much, except for making sure that your personal hardware, your personal software, your personal suite of tools is protected and offline as much as possible. And, you know, we've talked about air gapping different things over the years. I would just continue to do that. But you can't lose too much sleep over this. Just sucks that you're in a system here where you probably didn't have a choice but to share some data and it's been compromised now.
You're giving them credit. You're saying it's going to happen on the show in a month. We'll get this information. We'll get it in 2 years, maybe.
Yeah, when they tell us about the breach. That's right. The breach will happen in the next month, but in 2 years, and then, they'll tell us it.
Yeah, then we'll get that. And by then, it's, you know, the water's long gone under the
bridge. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
There's a new security flaw dubbed Leaky CLI, and it appears to be impacting some popular cloud-based platforms. And this is a CLI, is a command line interface. And well, these are the tools used to manage and interact with Amazon Web Services and the Google Cloud platforms. And the vulnerability stems from specific commands within these CLIs that inadvertently expose sensitive information stored in environmental variables. And this could contain information such as password and access keys. And that's very dangerous if somebody gets access to that information. Similarly, though, we have Microsoft. They addressed a vulnerability that was very close to this in the Azure CLI back in November of 2023. So right now there are patches upcoming for AWS and the Google Cloud provider, but the patches aren't yet available. But since Microsoft did one very similar, maybe they could work off what's been done there and try to accelerate this thing even faster and get the patches out much, much sooner than normal. But anyways, you have to carefully, what they're saying right now to mitigate the risk, you have to carefully review the documentation for specific CLI commands that you're using to identify any potential for leaking sensitive information. Also, minimize the use of environment variables. So this information that is storing sensitive information, minimize the usage of that. And also try to segment the workload. That way, within your cloud environment, you kind of limit the amount of potential impact that could be exposed through a potential breach. And of course, the last thing, keep everything updated. Once there's a patch, then employ that. But this, how many people use cloud-based software information? Yeah. And we're talking these are major players here.
Not even just the information. Like, you can also do cloud compute, right? That's a huge part of the pie.
Yeah, I never thought about that too. Yeah, so the output of that, is that going to be compromised in one way, shape, or another? So, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's funny, the Amazon and Google response. I'll read it right from the article. Where did I see it? with both AWS and Google Cloud Platform, while both AWS and Google Cloud were notified of leaky CLI, they maintain that the current behavior falls within the expected design parameters. However, the security community is urging cloud providers to consider implementing additional protection within their CLIs to prevent sensitive information from leaking into logs, especially within automated CI/CD workflows. So what are they saying? This is intended behavior. Like, okay, well, I'm telling you, there's a problem here. Like, where's the patch? People, it's hard. It's this is one of the reasons why when everyone says there's oligopoly in computing and in data services in the States, it's not a good thing, right? Because you basically have Microsoft, Google, and Amazon. If they get compromised, like two of the three have here, where are you going to go? You can't uproot your data or your compute or your cloud needs in a heartbeat because these guys say that it's expected behavior and aren't going to focus on a patch in the short term. It's difficult, right? And so when other companies try and sprout up, Google obviously, you know, and the other companies too, famously trying to pull up the ladder on cloud, famously trying to pull up the ladder on data center use. I know in Bitcoin, we talk a lot about how governments are saying, no, but you can't use Bitcoin, you can't use mining as an electricity draw, blah, blah, blah. We want to regulate that. Some people think it's just the currency issue that they want to protect the dollar hegemony, which is partially true. But I think more of it than we give credence to or for is actually this. Companies who don't want to have to compete long-term with other major data centers in terms of cloud computing and storage and whatnot. And I think that it goes undiscussed a lot of the time because it's a lot sexier to say, oh, they're afraid the dollar's going to collapse. They may be, but it's not going to collapse this month or this year or, you know, probably not in the next 5 or 10 years even. But this stuff is important to a lot of the big players. And it's one of the reasons that they pull up the ladder, because then they can go through a response protocol like this, where they basically say, "Va fangul," and you know, like they don't give you any tangible or, in this case, I think necessary patches or fixes for the short term.
I'm surprised Meta's not getting into the cloud storage.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
You know, they have the capacity. I mean, they run what? Instagram?
They're doing data centers now too, right? You know that on
for WhatsApp. For sure, for all the products they have.
On WhatsApp now, you can do AI searches in the search bar.
Yeah.
Brand new, right? So if I just hit, like, I don't know, I'll just type in hip hop reels. It's giving me a suggestion. Oh, it actually doesn't work. It doesn't let me touch anything. Never mind.
But work they have these server farms for all their products between Facebook, Instagram,
yeah,
WhatsApp, and God knows whatever else is under their umbrella. I have no
Facebook,
idea.
Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. I think that's got to be it, I think, right?
Maybe.
Threads. Meta? Threads.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
So did everybody else.
So you figure with all that horsepower, they would have got into cloud computing as well, as just to provide an alternative to clients out there, to customers. But whatever, maybe.
Yeah.
They know better than I do.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, Zuckerberg, by the way, no one is ready for... Like to Silicon Valley tech cells are not ready for protein powder and trenbolone Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg's shoulders and neck getting bigger by the day. And I don't know if you saw his most recent video about their AI product. He's actually got a relatively large chain on that he's wearing outside of his shirt. The man's testosterone has never been higher, and it's continuing to increase. It's we're entering a new era for Zuck. You love to see it. You love to see it.
No, he's trying to get it into... He's always involved with MMA, right? He's walking people down and...
He's going to fight Elon. Remember, he's fighting Elon Musk, or he's about to. He tore his ACL, I think. ACL.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
Well, he recovered fast because he's getting involved in everything again.
How many times have I said ACL, people think it's a year. It's literally 5 months. Achilles, same thing. It's 5 months. Just be diligent in your rehab and eat more meat. You'll make it.
But when you see it, I mean, it's been a while since I watched sports. When somebody tears their ACL, they tend not to come back for about 12 months.
No, it's way quicker than that. Way quicker.
Is it now?
That. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you two examples. This year in football, we'll have guys playing week one who tore their ACLs in like week 11, 12 last year. So you're talking like, you know, late November, early December. So it's about a 9-month recovery. And then 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, the Rams had a running back, Cam Akers, who tore his Achilles in the preseason and played in the playoffs.
There's a different injury. So Achilles, I'm talking
pretty,
about
still pretty severe. Like those are generally regarded as one-year injuries or were. And no, the medical profession has come so far in repairing those injuries, man. It's crazy. It is crazy. I know firsthand.
Tommy John surgeries, though. I'm not sure if you're following that story.
What's Shohei doing? Did he have the surgery on his arm? He must have, right?
He had it at least once.
Yeah. I think he had it again last year or should have. Because he was obviously like a dominant
hitter. They shut him down at the end of the year, yeah.
They did shut him down for that surgery. Okay, so I wonder if he's going
to I don't know if he had a surgery or not, but yeah, he was...
He's playing now, so... Yeah. Is he pitching? Because you don't need it to hit, but you do need it to pitch.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. I got to find this out.
Well, back in the day...
We need Mark and Joan to put this in the next Axis of Easy, discussing Shohei Ohtani's recovery and also gambling scandal. Gambling scandal.
There's a huge... There's a huge problem in baseball. I don't want to go into the weeds, but a lot of people, a lot of pitchers are getting, they're tearing it early.
Yeah. I read a story. Go ahead.
They're looking at a few things. They're looking at velocity and spin rate.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. They're not looking at control anymore, right? You want to hit three digits on the radar, and that's the most important thing.
Control too is very, but like before you didn't have that. Before you would have a pitcher, if you wanted to pitch 150 pitches, don't matter. Here's the ball. Whenever you get in trouble, then we'll pull you out. Now it's a pitch count. There's pitch clock, so you have to pitch quicker.
Yeah.
And typically pitchers don't go past, you know, 5-6 innings now.
It's funny that the pitching community, I see this on Twitter all the time. This is not related to cybersecurity at all, but the pitching community pretty unified in blaming the pitch clock for these injuries. I just think like, you sure, man? I'm pretty sure that now, if you're a pitcher, if you show any arm talent at all, you're going to be pitching a lot more than you would have 10 or 12 years ago in your youth, college, and then in your developmental league stuff. Like you're going to be throwing a way more than, and as you mentioned, way faster with way more spin. It's hard on your elbow. And the injuries are really a result of early specialization, I think. A lot of research in the sort of physiotherapy field shows that you're going to have more significant major tendon injuries when you specialize. So if you're playing basketball, for example, 5 nights a week, the likelihood that you tear your Achilles or your ACL before you turn 18 is much higher than if you played basketball 2 nights a week, hockey 2 nights a week, and soccer 2 nights a week. Like you're sort of developing the muscles around those tendons in a way that doesn't put the same repeated strain on them. Anyway, that's far afoot, but maybe we can get somebody on the CBP to talk about sports injuries. I love that topic because I've had a few of them and I'm fascinated by the recovery and the prevention. It's become a huge part of my life. It should be for everybody, but most of the time you don't do it until you get hurt, right? It's a natural response.
Well, let's talk about this response here, because law enforcement in both sides of the world, the United States and Australia, they move forward to throw a wrench in a cyber jacking operation, crypto jacking operation, operation that was arresting several individuals that was they were involved with distributing and the development of a malware tool called Hive Rat.
That's I think it's a 3 for me. It's better than the former name Firebird. Bad name, very bad.
That's
it's like a wish.com sports car, so we don't need that.
It's an 80s. I'll give that. I like Firebird better. Anyways, Hive Rat, the capabilities of this thing. Well, this malware functioned as a remote access Trojan, and that's the rat part. So it gave attackers remote access over infected computers, and it allowed them to steal private communications, login credentials, and other sensitive information from its victims. And these individuals, they were suspected of selling this to criminals who then used it to hijack the processing power of victims' computers to what? Mine cryptocurrency.
Incredible.
And that's a process known as cryptojacking. And they say that this mining system here generated some $3.5 million from these guys. So, okay, let's just get into the nitty-gritty here. If your computer is running slow, if your computer is running hot, and you're doing very little with it, if you have the ability to look at the processes that are being run, how much computing power, how much CPU power, how much memory is being used, yeah, something's amiss. So
you gotta have it's crazy, Len, that this goes on. You're right. Continue.
Mining with a CPU is very taxing on a CPU. You're gonna notice your computer run slow. You're gonna notice your computer run hot. If you have a laptop and you unplug the power to it, you're gonna notice the power of the battery life is gonna be drastically reduced. Same thing if it's mining from a GPU. It may not slow down the performance of the system itself unless you're playing a game, but you're going to notice it's running hot. The fan is running. Something is just not right. You could self-identify these problems through what I just said. That's just basic. But even if you want to go further, you can look at how what tasks are being run, how much CPU power is being used, how much GPU power is being used. You could just look at everything and figure out, geez, something is wrong. I can't believe that this is still a thing. You know, like nowadays when you're mining for stuff, you're using specialized hardware to do
it. Yeah, that's the other big story. I know, that's the other big story.
It, not just ASICs, but even GPUs, you need powerful GPUs and a lot of them to mine some of these altcoins. So, can't believe this is still a thing. You know, I'm going to leave it like that. This is nuts.
Okay, so I want to just, we'll leave you with this story, obviously, but I want to make a note here. A name that we didn't give a rating to, but we need to. Okay. The second guy involved in this from Nebraska, his name is Charles O. Parks III. He goes by CP3O. Len, how good a moniker is that for a guy whose name is Charles O. Parks III?
That is a 5 out of 5.
Oh, that's a 5. That's a 5. That is amazing. Incredible. Okay. As far as the mining thing, I'll add one more thing to this. If I look at my computer, okay, and if I hit Alt R on either this one or the CBP video rig, I can see CPU and GPU utilization in real time. And also, Len, you know what else gives away that your computer is doing something it shouldn't be doing? That the fan is running. If the fan is running, it's something is going on. It's too hot, or your graphics card is being used for something that's like, you know, really labor intensive. If you're just sitting on your computer, okay, cyberjacking it, let's say, you shouldn't be hearing the fan. The other thing I would note here is that is this an indication that a lot of people now have like graphical hardware on their computers? There's not a lot of people buying these just like GPU only computers. I wonder if that's the case, because really you do need like going through all this trouble paying for the malware, deploying it, putting yourself at risk of being caught. It's not really worth it to get somebody who's got integrated graphics, like integrated Intel graphics on a $500 netbook or whatever, right? If those are even still a thing. So does this mean that you're seeing a trend now, a movement toward everyone having graphics cards? It might. Graphics cards are getting cheaper and cheaper. And I think that, you know, the existence of these products at a sort of a retail level, this is what I would call retail hacking, tells me that there's a bigger swath of the population who are uneducated and have good enough hardware to make them a target. Interesting development, right? Kind of a change in what the expectation in home computing is.
I just don't know how much they can mine out of this. If you're using a particular computer's resources, an unsuspecting user's computer, you're probably going to take just a portion of the resources to mine. And with that, like, how much could you get? I guess they're just trying to, you know, put as many out there as possible. And through that, try to get as much to mine as much of these altcoins as possible. But
I don't know.
I'm not mining.
You're not mining. It's not my problem. It's not your problem. Yeah. Simple as.
I don't think I'm mining, but my computer. It's not running hot. I could tell you that. It's not running any fans right now. I could hear
My GPU is 0% right now on this laptop. So actually, yeah. Mark made a suggestion to get Malwarebytes on all our machines. So I got a standard home subscription to Malwarebytes for, I don't know, it's like $100 or something. Worth it. It's pretty cheap. It runs very lean, which is great. It's exactly what you want. Anyway, this is not an app for Malwarebytes. This is Axis of Easy number 346. If you liked what you heard, make sure to subscribe, YouTube, podcast, wherever you get your stuff. And accessofeasy.com is where you can sign up for the newsletter and read the rest in Data Breach and Overreach. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
Take care and go mine.